Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. June 13th, 1971. A pleasant day in New York City. The front page of the New York Times Sunday edition. This is before the internet, of course. It's also before any communication is possible instantly. So all of us in Manhattan and people around the world picked up the front page and looked at something called the Pentagon Papers, the first day of their publication. The Pentagon Papers were documents assembled by, well, for one, the previous administrations, Kennedy administration, Johnson administration, but they dated back to 1945, the historical role of the U.S. in Vietnam. This is a crisis atmosphere. The young Nixon administration is looking at either winding down the war or finding a solution to what looks to be an intractable Cold War battlefield, Vietnam. There are hundreds of thousands of American troops involved and more moving in and out. There's violence every day. The casualty rate is very high. Richard Nixon looks at the publication, which he didn't know was coming, and says, fine. This beats up on the Johnson administration's mistakes and the Kennedy administration's mistakes. Not my problem. I'm a Republican. However, Henry Kissinger, then the National Security Advisor, we're told, speaks to the president and says, this must stop. The next day, the Attorney General John Mitchell goes to court and wins a stay against the New York Times to continue to publish historical documents. That is the frame of the now present debate of executive privilege. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at University of Chicago and NYU to comment on executive privilege then, executive privilege now. It came up most recently with regard to the invocation of executive privilege by a prior president, Donald Trump, about his papers. Richard, a very good evening to you. I knew that you would enjoy being younger as I do. Where were you in 1971 when the papers, Pentagon Papers, were first revealed by the New York Times? Good evening to you.
I was teaching law at the University of Southern California, and I certainly found out about them pretty much the same way that everybody else did. And I thought that this was, you know, kind of a bomb. If you ever go back and read the Pentagon Papers, they are some of the most tedious and boring documents that you could ever hope to find. But the key feature about them is that they managed to display all of the uncertainties and confusions that took place during the Kennedy administration. And what happened is Richard Nixon, now thinking that the dangers to the office is too great from their leakage, he invokes the executive privilege type of argument in order to protect a previous president. Because he thought there was serious institutional dangers. The contrast today is there was this recent decision in the Supreme Court, following up on one in the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. And what happened there is the president and the Congress had decided that it was important to release the papers concerning Donald Trump and the January 6th, pick your own term, riot, confrontation, insurrection, or whatever. And in fact, what they want to do is to release them to the House committee. So in the case, you have one president basically protecting a former and the other exposing him. And what became clear, at least in the decision of the Supreme Court, was that the situation was now that the former president, Trump, who has an obvious interest in his own papers, has no particular way to stop them. I thought it was a very serious mistake. It's a tough balancing act that has to take place. But to argue that you can have executive privilege that lasts only so long as you're in office is going to obviously have a very serious effect on candor in conversations that take place by one president, knowing that he could be outed by another.
The puzzle here and the ironies here are Richard Nixon, who is not celebrated by the Democratic Party, moved to protect two previous Democratic presidents, one of whom had already defeated him in 1960, John Kennedy. And the other never spoke well of Richard Nixon in office or afterwards, Mr. Johnson. But Richard Nixon moved to protect him at Henry Kissinger's urging. Now, my understanding of the Supreme Court decision is President Biden is not moving to protect a previous president who is of the other party. In other words, Nixon's first idea was, sure, fine, let him publish it. It exposes the weakness of my opponents. And Mr. Biden's decision is, sure, let them publish it or let them reveal these things because it exposes the weakness of the previous administration, my opponent. Except Nixon changed his mind. Why did he change his mind, Richard?
I think what happens is Kissinger and even himself regarded the situation as an institutional responsibility rather than a political opportunity. And this question of executive privilege is one on which virtually all presidents of both parties at all times have insisted vis-a-vis the Congress. And it is a bit of a constitutional muddle, I might add, because there are two things that we know about this. One, there's no reference whatsoever in the Constitution about an executive privilege. It's all inferred from separation of powers. And there's no reference in the Constitution to the ability of Congress to discharge its oversight responsibilities. So that what happens is you have two implied doctrines that are created out of pretty much thin air. The reason you have them is they both make sense. And then you have to figure out how to reconcile them. I thought the Supreme Court did a particularly poor job on this, and the Circuit Court did one as well, because I don't think they understood the gravity of the playoffs. There was a report that was issued in 1986 by the Office of Legal Counsel under Reagan. I've never seen the full report, but I've seen excerpts from it. And what it seemed to say, it was a kind of a really delicate balance as to which president should prevail. So if you have previous documents that you have to release in order to make sure that you can conduct diplomatic relations throughout the world, one can understand it. But in this case, what they're trying to do is to run an investigation where it's not even clear exactly why it is that you think Trump was part of this particular insurrection. You have lots of evidence that can take place outside of this that you can bring to bear on this. We know a great deal about it. And so usually what would happen under circumstances like this, if you're going to release them, a couple conditions would happen. First, what would happen is it would make it pretty clear that you could release them only to the committee, not to the public at large. And it's not clear that there's any restriction on what the committee can do with these documents once it gets it. It may decide to keep them confidential, but it's not guaranteed. And then secondly, what you would probably want to do is to make sure that you give them up in dribs and drabs. What you do is you say, okay, tell us the kinds of things that you want, and then there's something in there which is particularly suggestive that there's some irregularity, you get more documents. But these seem to be document dumps. This was the first tranche, so we don't know whether they're going to do more. But it seems that there was no effort on the part of either of these opinions to say that there's going to be a reexamination of the release after you've examined what there was. There was no effort to look at these doctrines in camera, that is, in secret, to see whether or not they ought to go out. So this was going over the top, and the argument was very clear. The president and the Congress have decided that it's important. And it's kind of ironic because the president is the same man who made that really vicious speech about the Republicans in general and Trump in particular in Atlanta. And the Congress turns out to be a subcommittee in which they're only opponents of Trump who happen to be on it. So what you do is you kind of elevate this into a neutral Solon-like discussion of the way things are going on, when in fact the practical elements of this is that somebody on the other side could treat this as a genuine political vendetta. It is really quite remarkable. There are people who think that January 6th was the equivalent of 9/11. I regard that as an absurdity beyond all point. And then there are other people who say it's only a walk in the park. It's not that either. It's somewhere in between. But the decisions, I think, here are based largely on the sense that anything that Donald Trump wants is wrong. And as I've said time after time, I dread the possibility that he would want to run again in 2024. But I don't think the politics has anything to do with the legality. And you don't change the law with respect to a guy whom you don't like. If anything, you have to be even more careful to make sure that your political things haven't interrupted your legal judgments.
The irony's deepened. The Pentagon Papers, Richard Nixon's decision to go to court, John Mitchell to go to court to stop them, they were published nonetheless because they spread across the country. Different newspapers would take them up and there would be another court injunction. It was high drama. Inside this, of course, the White House then conceived a special investigations unit known to history as the Plumbers. The Plumbers were first sent out to find out what Daniel Ellsberg, a man who had been part of the Pentagon Papers, told the New York Times or how he conducted his revelations, because we know now that Mr. Ellsberg had a piece of the larger document trove of the Pentagon Papers. The Plumbers took it upon themselves to break into Daniel Ellsberg's California psychiatrist. This led to revelation during the trial of Daniel Ellsberg for the Espionage Act of 1917. Quite fantastic. I'm not making this up. Richard knows this history.
I know you're not.
All right. They break in. That broke the trial. It was declared a mistrial, and Ellsberg was understood as a martyr to the anti-war effort. However, that Plumbers unit was then available to be deployed against the Democrats in the following campaign of 1972, leading to the Watergate fiasco. So what we're looking at here is an integral part of presidential history, kneebone, shinbone, or horse, nail, kingdom. And Richard, I think that you, in your essay for Defining Ideas, identify that you don't know what kind of damage can be done to the Constitution and the country when you release presidential papers. Going forward, I'm looking beyond Mr. Biden, whatever the 47th and 48th president want to reveal about these present times. They're taking that risk. Do I say that correctly?
I think you certainly do. As again, I mean, I'm not trying to make light of the investigation of January 6th. I think it's an important topic. But it seems to me that you have to make a very powerful showing of demonstrated need to get these particular patients. Remember, this is not a situation where we have nothing whatsoever. I think a lot of things have already been turned over. A lot of things have been topped up. There are all sorts of tapes of what went on the steps. Lots of stuff that's going on. And so first what you do is you assemble the evidence that you have, and then only if you find their conspicuous gaps, you start to put in these requests. And the court, I think, should be tougher with respect to the way in which they go. This was a complete surrender. What they said is the president thinks they should get it, the Congress thinks they should get it, ergo they should get it. It was treated as though the current branches of government held all the cards and the previous president held no cards at all. And that's just a crazy way to think about this subject matter. And what was really sad was when the Supreme Court got this, it ducked this entire issue. What it said is that the circuit court said that that Trump could not have kept these things quiet if he had been a sitting president, and so therefore he has no claim whatsoever if he's out of the presidency. What the Supreme Court should have done was to say, well, this is why it is that the district court or the district circuit court said that he had no claim. We better reexamine that part of the situation, too. And it's also a little bit disconcerting. When you realize that the panel that essentially did releases was consisted of three very liberal Democratic judges. So the whole thing, I think, doesn't kind of smell right to me. I mean, I understand why people have a lot of distaste for Donald Trump. I've certainly voiced that myself upon a particular occasion. But again, it's the separation of politics from law that is critical. And it turns out, I think, that both the Supreme Court, the District Court, and the Circuit Court all sort of fell down on the job.
Richard, I want to turn to another matter that's at hand right now, not about past presidential behavior or future presidential behavior, but the honorable retirement of Associate Justice of the Supreme Court Stephen Breyer. When we come back, I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.